So I wanted to explore the topic of free speech and right speech tonight. I think it's a timely topic, particularly at this point in time when the question of the appropriateness of language and words and what's being said has become so topical in this political environment we are in, and also talk about it in the context of our community, because we're in a community. That's what a Sangha is. So I wanted to start with three quotes. The first is by the Buddha. I think a good place to start. He says, "Teach this triple truth to all, a generous heart, a life of service and compassion, and kind speech are the things which renew humanity." Then there's a Dr. Lawrence J. Peter who said, "Speak when you are angry, and you'll make the best speech you'll ever regret." And then there's Eric Idle of the Monty Python fame. You may remember him. "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will make me go in a corner and cry by myself for hours." Been there, done that. So let's talk about first, we'll talk about free speech. It's guaranteed by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. It's part of our heritage, part of our culture. Guaranteed. And right speech is the third of the eight factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. And it's also one of the five precepts. Perhaps one of the more difficult precepts to keep and practice. So let's kind of explore how they intersect in the context of today's world and within the Buddhist Sangha. Let's start by examining how free speech is determined by the Supreme Court, who's made many decisions around free speech. And they basically say there are certain restrictions. These restrictions are slander, false statement of fact, obscenity, incitement, plagiarism, and some others. Well, this leaves some latitude. You know, we have a lot of room left outside of that. And even some of those issues have been argued over, like what is obscenity? And it changes over time. For example, George Carlin and a lot of other comedians now are regularly using language that Lenny Bruce got locked up for a half century ago in my lifetime. Overall, in our culture, free speech is really celebrated. And you see it, you know, with certain expressions like, tell it like it is. Ooh, I just had an Aaron Neville flashback. Surely you've heard that song, right? Like it is. I may not dance, but there'll be some singing, right? Speak the truth, no matter how unpleasant. Be a straight talker. Call a spade a spade. Don't beat around the bush. Shoot from the hip. And then there's, you can't handle the truth. Anybody get a Nicholson flashback on that one? Yeah. So these are expressions that become part of our vernacular, and we're really, it's celebrated, you know, to really say what's on our mind. Being forthright, direct, straightforward are seen as positive traits. Who wants to be evasive and secretive and unclear, thin-skinned, wishy-washy, unequivocal, elusive, non-committal? Right? Those are all negative terms. In some circles, people are viewed as being less than spiritually evolved if they're uncomfortable with hearing the truth. I was involved with encounter groups back in the 80s and 90s. And in that environment, people were unloading on other people all the time with an expectation that if they were grounded and spiritual enough, they could take it. even appreciate this. The whole notion of asking permission to deliver helpful insights into their faults never occurred to some of these people. And then, you know, some of us over time learn to say, are you open to feedback? You know, before delivering the hammer, you know? But a lot of people didn't. And I used to facilitate these groups, and there was another guy named Don who was facilitating, and he was the general manager of a printing company. And he got kind of tired of this. You know, these people just like, well, I'm going to tell you, you know, what your faults are and all this kind of stuff. So he actually had some business cards printed up that he kept in his pocket. And he always had them ready. And on the business card it said, your criticism is sincerely appreciated. Thank you very much. And fuck you. He gave out a few of those. And for those of us who are familiar with 12-step circles, this notion of helping other people see their faults, their character defects, is referred to as taking their inventory. You know, and people are encouraged just to focus on keeping their side of the street clean. But there's this constant, you know, flowing back and forth. Like, when is it appropriate to say certain things and when isn't? When isn't it? So these can relate to personal matters, interactions, personality issues, and a lot of other opinions. For example, within our Sangha, we have all kinds of discussions and disagreements about things like the room temperature. Should the windows be open? I used to be part of a Sangha in California. It was part of the San Francisco Zen Center. And they had famous window wars in the early days. How to deal with latecomers? You know, should we close the door? Should we keep them open? You know, should we ask them to sit out there? What about heavy breathers? You know, do we say something to them? Do we just use it as part of our practice? What about the annoying people? You know, this is a constant dialogue, and Rania gets deluged with all kinds of preferences and opinions and complaints. How do we deal with this? How do we work with this? Where are the boundaries? Geez, we got free speech here, right? Shouldn't we just say our truth? So how do we express our opinions in still have honest, constructive, open dialogue? Well, in the Dhammapada, the Buddha said, and he, you know, he primarily taught to a monastic community, but this applies to anybody. He says, the monk who controls his mouth, who speaks wisely, who is not puffed up, who explains the Dharma's meaning, sweet is his speech. So he gave us some guidelines. Controls his mouth, speaks wisely, not puffed up, and explains the meaning of the Dharma. So let's look more in depth at some of these suggestions. As I mentioned before, right speech is part of the Eightfold Path. And in the explanation of right speech, it is it has four aspects. The first one is just not lying, you know, speaking the truth. Two, avoiding rude or coarse words, instead using gentle speech. Three, not slandering, but promoting friendliness and unity. Four, avoiding frivolous speech, only saying what's appropriate and beneficial. So let's look at each one of these a little bit more. The first one, not lying, but speaking the truth. Well, basic advice, Buddhists should always try to be truthful, which also includes not telling lies by omission, right? Sometimes not including the truth is a form of unskillful speech. And of course, this just doesn't apply to Buddhist practice. Virtually all the religious traditions emphasize honest and positive communication. So this is a practice that has benefit not to others in the community, but, you know, or within our community, but to everyone. So So the principle of free speech allows a person to express any opinion whatsoever, however absurd or disagreeable it may be, as long as you don't violate those guidelines from before, you know, slander and plagiarism and so on. But right speech requires that someone be truthful and accurate. So if someone sincerely believes something to be true, even though it's not, that's still not right speech. If I'm promoting untruths, thinking they're true, that's still not right speech. We're not off the hook on that one. It's especially harmful karma if we're misrepresenting what the Buddha taught. Teachers, beware. So the second of the guidelines is avoiding rough or coarse words, but using gentle speech beneficial to the listener. This is really just being compassionate in our speech, and it's not just our words, but it's also our tone and our gestures. I lived in parts of the world, particularly in Asia, where it's very impolite to point. You're nodding your head, you know about this one. And I had to learn it because, you know, I move my hands and I might, you know, and I had to learn, like, don't point. That's considered very rude and aggressive, no matter what the actual words are. So the main point is to avoid speech that's motivated by anger and ill will, anything that really intends to insult and hurt the feelings of others. Truthfully, there's really very seldom a need to raise our voice or use strong words. Now, obviously, there's exceptions. You know, if our child is about ready to run in the street, that might be an appropriate time to raise your voice and shout, "Stop!" You know, but in most cases, we don't really need to do that. And then we're in the world of social media and email. That's another tricky place, right? A lot of people get in a lot of trouble posting stuff in social media and emails. And I've learned to, you know, I'm very careful about sending emails. If there is some conflict, I'll say, we need to talk about this. I've learned the hard way on that one because I've been misunderstood. The third one was not slandering, but promoting friendliness and unity. Slander is basically denigrating another person. Speaking the truth to point out faults without prejudice or malice if someone is behaving badly is not slander if one really aims at benefit. So it's one thing if we point out someone's fault, but if we're doing it with an intention of kindness and support, then that wouldn't be considered, you know, unfriendly. Obviously, there's gray matter there, gray areas, gray matter. Gray matter's up here. So the fourth one is avoiding frivolous speech, but only saying what's appropriate and beneficial. So frivolous speech is just, you know, it's talk that really doesn't have any purpose or benefit. It disrupts the serious discussion you know, when I lived in Germany, do the Germans like small talk?
Not so much like
here. No. They think it's such...
tears immediately.
I was teaching English in Germany, business English, and I had to teach small talk to business people because I explained to them, you don't just walk in and ask for the order. You have to kind of warm people up. How you doing? How's your family? All this kind of stuff before you, you know, go for the jugular. And they thought, this is such a waste of time. Right? So it does vary culture to culture. But I don't have a lot of patience for small talk myself. But the Buddha was very clear. He said that right speech, skillful speech, is really if you're focused on the Dharma. You know, talking about the Dharma. Something aimed at benefiting health and long life and prosperity and social welfare. And even talking politics can be beneficial. But...
careful.
It's a slippery slope, right? Because politics can really be a springboard to unskillful speech. And if we've followed what's been going on lately, we've seen lying, profanity, rude, coarse words, incitement, slander. You know, we've seen this by people running for office. Certainly an absence of speech that's really appropriate and beneficial. But we can easily fall into that ourselves, you know. What about us? We've got plenty of opinions, strong feelings. I have mine. So how do we work with that? How do we keep from developing what I call irritable mouth syndrome? That's not original. I wish I could take credit for that. I mean, we're in this culture in the U.S. where there's this, now I did invent this word, I think, rantocracy. Ranting, rantocracy? You won't find it in the dictionary. There's this rantocracy. Screaming politicians and pundits and radio talk hosts and people on all sides of the arguments, trying to make ourselves heard, making points. So how do we maintain equanimity through this and practice right speech and still stay in the political conversations? I was talking with Margaret. I feel like things have gotten so toxic right now, I can actually feel the energy. I mean, it's like it's pervasive. There's this, you know, it's gotten so polarized and so tense. You know, maybe I'm projecting or something, but it just feels like it's in the atmosphere. I want to be informed. I want to partake in discussions. I'm a child of the 60s. My favorite button that I ever had back in the 60s was, give a damn. Anybody remember that? Give a damn. You know, I give a damn. So how do we have these conversations about kindness? And be involved in social activism and discussions. And I wanted to reference something that Giorgio wrote. And I asked his permission to share this. Giorgio was involved in the animal rights movement or, you know, for a long time. And he wrote a paper that he shared with me. I asked him to share it with me when he mentioned it. And it's called The Rhetoric of Protest, Spiritual Activism. And it's really very nicely done. And one of the things he talks about is the fact that in dealing with animal rights issues, is to remember that the people on the other side of the argument, the people that may be opposing the interests of animal rights, are people too, you know? And that if we express our opinions in such a strong way, and you can clarify this if I'm not representing it very well in your sharing, but, you know, people can take on, like, attitude or the tone of these fire and brimstone preachers and just really alienate people. So, you know, I think it's a beautiful example. I'll just read a section of what he wrote. He says, why do fire and brimstone preachers fail to save the damned? I would suggest because their approach alienates almost everyone they encounter, entrenching their opposition to the message delivered. Depending on your point of view, that message may even be the truth, but the manner of its delivery almost guarantees it will not be heard. I think that our movement, like all social movements that expose one to the enraging reality of ruthless exploitation and oppression, is vulnerable to the temptation to righteous anger. The anger is understandable, even justified, no doubt about it. But does it further our cause when we vent it on the abusers so aggressively? How do we avoid unskillful speech in social activism, creating conflict and ill will, causing harm? You know, I think about Gandhi. You know, Gandhi was the leader of an independence movement in India. And if you study his history and, you know, read what he did, he totally disarmed the British because he refused to get combative with them. It wasn't just in the nonviolence in the protests, even in his conversations with them. He won them over. They didn't know what to do with him. What do we do with this guy? We can't get in an argument with him. He, you know, just his whole attitude was like that. One thing we can do in avoiding our using unskillful speech is to work with our minds and cultivate compassion. So we can develop a clear mind and an open heart. In our meditation, what we do is we watch our breath. We create stillness. We observe what comes up in our experience, whether it's people moving furniture upstairs. What is he doing? So we watch what happens. We watch the thoughts, the sensations, the feelings, noises, smells. We watch everything that arises in our experiences, and we notice what our response is. We notice the habits of our thinking, our attitudes. We learn how our minds work. We learn how our thoughts connect to our feelings. Because what feelings are always connected to thoughts, right? And we notice how they show up in our actions and speech. When we do this practice, we can actually notice how thoughts show up as feelings. And I've had the experience of catching myself about to say something before I say it, because I can see the thoughts. I can notice the feelings in my body. This is what we can do. We gain insights into the motivations behind our behavior. And we care more about the choices we make. And our hearts soften when we experience the connection to others and understand the pervasive nature of suffering. Just as the Dalai Lama has. You know, here's a man whose country was taken away from him, and millions of Tibetans were slaughtered. Monasteries were destroyed. He's lived in exile since 1959, and yet he has nothing but compassion for the Chinese. He never says an ill word towards the Chinese. That's the ultimate expression of this practice, is learning that the Chinese and us, we're not separate. You know? So in our practice, we begin to be attuned to our habitual patterns. We see what we do, who we are, and how we hold ourselves together with opinions and ideas about things. We form these opinions and ideas, and it develops the sense of I-ness. It's an ego identity. So, we create our identity around our opinions. Well, I'm this, and I'm that, and I believe this, and I believe that, and that's wrong, and this is right. And what it does is it reinforces this sense of us and them. The truth is, opinions are just opinions. They're nothing more or less. It just depends on what kind of energy we bring to them. We can notice opinions, just like we notice everything else that arises in our experiences, sounds and smells, thoughts. And we just label them as opinions. So if we have an opinion, we can just notice that's an opinion. It doesn't mean we have to express it. And what we start understanding that our opinions are no more solid and fixed than anything else in our experience. Is there any absolute truth about anything that arises in our mind? To have just a few seconds of doubt about the solidity and absolute truth of our opinions really helps introduce us to the possibility of egolessness. I had a teacher once who said, we have this funny idea that there's us, me, and then there's this world out there. And we create that in our mind. It's totally an illusion. And by strengthening these opinions and creating the sense of us and them, it just strengthens that separation. We don't have to make our opinions go away. We can have opinions. And we shouldn't criticize ourselves for having opinions. We just notice what we say to ourselves. We just see them for what they are, while being aware that there are others who have different opinions. And they're all just opinions. We can acknowledge our thinking without judgment. Acknowledge our opinions without judgment. It's a form of non-aggression towards ourselves. It's an act of kindness. So we can just let the opinions go and come back to the immediacy of an experience. So if there's a particular candidate and I'm aware that they're saying something that I have an opinion about, I can just notice I have an opinion about that. You know, I don't have to go on Facebook. You know, I don't have to go around and create more toxic energy around that. When we're on the cushion or the chair and we're meditating, when we notice our thoughts, our sensations, our opinions, we just come back to our breath, our body. When we're off the cushion and we have an opinion, we just come back to our breath, our body. Come back to the experience of the face of the person in front of us, the taste of the coffee or tea that we're drinking, the sounds of people moving furniture, the wind, the flowers. It's just another voice of the Buddha, right? So we can just let go, just to notice and experience life with fresh eyes if we just observe it and let it go. But when we hold on to our opinions with aggression, no matter how valid our cause, we're just simply adding more aggression to the planet. The teacher Pema Chodron says it's very easy for opinions to become violence, just in our minds. But when we cling to these, would you say shut up?
Yeah.
Okay, time's up. I'm done. Wow, yeah, really. Free speech. Yeah. Anyway, it's just too easy to get into a war with others and get into a war with our own minds, you know. So the key can be just to observe and to watch and to notice what's arising. And we start really developing insights into the habits of mind and be able to just let them go without giving them more solidity and more life and more validation. And we can look at a social situation and still take action. If there's a river that's being polluted by a corporation, we can see how it's harming the environment, the animals, harming people, nature. We can take photos, we can document it. We can see the real suffering that exists. And we can take action and do it without making the other person wrong, without getting caught up in fear and anger, creating separation, without generating concepts of good and evil. It can be done. Is it easy? No. But it's really up to us to just sort out what's fact, what's opinion. If something's happening, it's fact. Our feelings about who's doing it, what their motivation is, it's opinion. Can we separate those? We're not talking about ignoring injustice and keeping quiet. But when we avoid getting, when we avoid getting swept away by outrage, we avoid unskillful behavior. When we try to help others, when we need to help others, we need to maintain clarity of mind and good heart. As the Dalai Lama says, we can strive to cultivate a mind that does not grasp at right and wrong. It's hard to believe sometimes, but if you believe the teachings of the Buddha, there is no one on this planet who does not have the capacity to wake up. We need support and encouragement to be aware of what we think, what we say, what we do. We needed to notice our opinions and cultivate a mind that does not grasp at right and wrong. Us and them. And this is where the sensation of suffering comes from. So, my message is never give up on ourselves, never give up on others, do what it takes, one day at a time, and do our best to speak with clarity and kindness.